Okay, so this is gonna be one of the dark episodes, because unfortunately we live in an incredibly dark world. And so in not long, we're gonna be talking about the New Zealand shooting. But there are a number of other things that we're gonna be talking about through the course of the show as well. Not long after that, actually. In the second block, we're gonna be joined by a representative from Media Matters, Madeline Peltz, who's gonna be talking about her research into past appearances by Tucker Carlson. She is the one that generated all of this week-long coverage about Tucker Carlson and his positions on misogyny, racism, a number of different topics. After that, we've got the climate strike that's going on in over 1,000 cities around the world. We're gonna be showing you some footage there, talk a little bit about why kids are going on strike around the world. And later on, more on Beto O'Rourke. His finances will be broken down by Kari Levine, who will join us once again. But as we were just talking about before we started the show, these are not good days to do the news, unfortunately.
I'm Brett Ehrlich from Happy Half Hour on the Network.
Oh, hello, yes.
I get it.
Oh, and I'm John Iderola, I guess I didn't say that either.
But that's exactly part of it. It's like these are the days when you just wake up, or before you went to sleep, you found out about news of something absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
There's this sinking feeling in your soul that nothing's ever going to get better. But we have to do the diligent job of reminding ourselves that there is good in humanity, and point out the difference between what this guy says is his, you know, reason for doing things and actual coherent thought.
Yeah. And so in a sec, we're going to break it down. But like we try to keep it real with you. So I just sometimes get so down about the state of the world and the inability for people who want to improve things to be able to not even push back against how hateful and selfish and greedy and self-interested and racist and misogynist and Islamophobic and all of that, that so many people are. People who are extremely influential, people who are extremely powerful and well-connected, they run countries in some cases, but to just slow down their advance. And when events like this happen, and then when you see all of the people who dwell in that sphere online, how quickly they turn to damage control mode, that It's self-parody at this point, that we can't expect that some of the same people who were going crazy about anti-Semitic comments, or comments that were interpreted as anti-Semitic, haven't tweeted in 14 hours, and I don't expect that they will, because they're not even going to pretend that they care about this sort of event. People who are implicated in it are already promoting their work through the implication, so that's awesome. Anyway, I apologize. So I'm a little bit thrown off, so just understand that as we go forward.
But let's
talk. So yesterday there was an absolutely horrific mass shooting in New Zealand that struck two mosques, the Al Noor Mosque and the Linwood Mosque. 49 people have been killed. As of right now, it appears that it is the worst mass shooting of its type in close to 30 years. And in that particular shooting back in the 90s, 13 people were killed. This is one of the modern mass shootings where the person would very much like you to dissect their political philosophy. There is a manifesto. Live stream the attack. Of course, we are not going to be showing any of that footage. We're not going to be doing anything to add oxygen to this person and what they want to accomplish. But we are going to talk about what happened. It is a devastating attack, obviously targeting Muslims in New Zealand. One figure that stood out for me as I was doing reading last night and this morning about this was that the 49 people that were killed, obviously more were injured, represents 1 out of 500 of the Muslims in New Zealand. So that's like a measurable percentage of that entire community in this country was directly murdered or injured in this terror attack by this far right white supremacist.
Yeah, and well, the first thing you said kind of about this person puts out a manifesto and said, dare you to read it. And then all the analysis that I read of it is, and I didn't even look at it itself because of this. This is not the first person to do it. It is a repeating dynamic that happens. Someone does something terrible. They go look for evidence of it happening, of traces of what he might do before the attack online somewhere. And then, but all the analysis essentially says, we went through it, and we don't know what he's serious about and what he's joking about. He gave little hints about, my goal of this is to get the other side to overreact. But that's the kind of thing that, like, why are you disclosing that so explicitly if that's what you want to do?
To possibly inspire others. I mean, look, there have been terrorists in the US that have said that they want to start a race war by getting the other side to strike back.
Right, but like that's usually you would do the thing and kind of hope that you executed it in a way that would provoke a race war. You wouldn't say, by the way, my goal in this well-plotted scheme is to start a race war and put it out there. And at the heart of it, the thing that gets you to talk about it is a senseless act, like a terrible, nonsensical act. And every time you go through something in his manifesto, you find another reason. It doesn't actually make sense. Mm-hmm. The weird things, and of course it doesn't, because these are not the things that normal, sensical people do. Like he mentions one of the reasons that he's doing this is to avenge the death of a 11-year-old Swedish girl, right? And he thinks that the way to do this, like he thinks I'm avenging the death of this girl who died at the hands of an extremist by going after people who were praying peacefully and not seeing that the person he has more in common with is the extremist who killed the 11-year-old girl.
Yeah.
He has more in common with that person than he has in common with the people he killed.
Well, I mean, look, that's one of the unfortunate things about irrationality is not acknowledging or understanding that you are being irrational. In any event, just a horrible person. Again, I have no interest in helping this person to accomplish their goal. I didn't read their manifesto. I've read other manifestos. I don't need Anders Breivik fan fiction, honestly, at this point. These people are not nearly as clever or philosophical as they think they are. They are murderous animals. That's what this guy is. In any event, I do want to play a little bit of video that was released. This is very late last night, although obviously there's a gigantic time difference between here and New Zealand, of the Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern of New Zealand talking about the initial news that was coming out from this attack.
What I can say is that it is clear that this is one of New Zealand's darkest days. Clearly, what has happened here is an extraordinary and unprecedented act of violence. Many of those who will have been directly affected by this shooting may be migrants to New Zealand. They may even be refugees here. They have chosen to make New Zealand their home, and it is their home. They are us. The person who has perpetuated this violence, no place in New Zealand. There is no place in New Zealand for such acts of extreme and unprecedented violence, which is it is clear this act was.
So look, that's an empathic and responsible response to what happened.
Yeah.
I wish that all political leaders could be trusted to respond in that sort of way. Unfortunately, they were not. And you were able to identify, it's going around now, some of the ways that people have responded. I've found a few as well. So I don't even like to quote a thing from the manifesto, but I feel like it would be weird not to mention that this guy does particularly cite people who have inspired him. And he called our president, this is not a politician in New Zealand, but an American politician, Donald Trump, quote, a symbol of renewed white identity and common purpose, but mocked Trump as a, quote, policymaker and leader. So look, that by itself, he can say whatever he wants. As you said, we don't know what he really meant. He implicates YouTubers as well, some particular YouTubers that have nothing to do with politics for the most part, as well as right-wing pundits. I will note that Donald Trump, as other politicians in the US, have responded to this. He tweeted, my warmest sympathy and best wishes goes out to the people of New Zealand after the horrible massacre in the mosques. 49 innocent people have so senselessly died, with so many more seriously injured. The US stands by New Zealand for anything we can do. God bless all. There's some weird terminology in that. But
senselessly died?
And the,
like that spontaneous.
As if a person didn't do it. And he says mosque, he doesn't acknowledge that this is obviously an attack against the Muslim faith. Warmest sympathy and best, fine, whatever. That's the best we're gonna get. Except, like if that was how we responded to all of these, that would be one thing. And this might be one of the best responses that he's had. But as many people have noticed, this is not generally the way he responds to attacks when it's not a mosque being targeted. So Mehdi Hassan on Twitter noted, notice he says not one word about the shooter. If it's a Latino or a Muslim, he's quick to say animal or evil. Not this time. He does that immediately if there is either, if it is a person from that group or we falsely believe initially that it's a person from that group, he immediately begins talking about them in that particular way. He chooses not to here. And the thing is, in this particular case, as weird as his response is, and the fact that he will never acknowledge the rise of online radicalization of right-wing white males, white supremacy, white nationalism, and how that is driving violence around the globe. We noted a story we talked about a couple months ago, or I guess a month ago, 100% of the extremist murders in the US last year were conducted by right-wingers. But apparently that number being 100%, even that isn't enough to actually get people to acknowledge this as a serious problem. But you also found New Zealand elected Senator Fraser Anning, who said this. This is a response. This is a politician in New Zealand responding to this massacre, the worst massacre in New Zealand in literally decades. The entire religion of Islam is simply the violent ideology of a 6th-century despot. It is the religious equivalent of fascism. And just because the followers of this savage belief were not the killers in this instance does not make them blameless. So we have a little bit more, but just understand, this is a politician in New Zealand saying that those who were massacred are not blameless in their massacre. He goes on to say, as we read in Matthew, all they that take the sword shall perish by the sword, and those who follow a violent religion that calls on them to murder us cannot be too surprised when someone takes them at their word and responds in kind.
In kind, they were at church, dude.
They were praying.
They were just at a community center / place of worship.
Yeah.
If a place is called, in a place called Christ Church, you should know that like it's, they were just praying. Mm-hmm. They were just getting together like they do every week, like you do when you go to church.
Yeah. This is, by the way, the same politician that made news like a year or two ago by saying that New Zealand's immigration problem requires a final solution.
Yeah. And so he said that, in the same statement, he said that the immigration is the reason that there's so much senseless violence in New Zealand, which yeah. A, there's not, and B, like these people were just sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is just about as bad a response as possible. More will be coming out throughout the day, obviously. We do have one more in the US, not quite as bad as that, but still, I think noteworthy. With Representative Louis Gohmert saying, the shootings at the New Zealand mosques are egregiously reprehensible. The shooters need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, along with anyone who knowingly aided their efforts in any way. There are courts, dispute resolutions, and legislatures to resolve controversies. There is no place for cold-blooded murders. So yes, he is denouncing the violence, but saying obviously there was something that needed to be addressed, but there are other ways to address it than gunning down a bunch of peaceful worshipers.
Yeah.
So I guess he's going to avoid much reaction considering that what Fraser Anning said is so clearly worse, but he is also saying something does need to be done, but perhaps not with assault rifles or other weapons. Anyway, Jesus, we could go on for a long time, and obviously we'll be talking about this more throughout the day. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be changing gears a little bit, talking about Media Matters' amazing investigation of some of Tucker Carlson's more controversial comments over the past decade after this. The week has not been good for Fox News, and in particular, it has not been great for Tucker Carlson either, because it turns out that he's talked a lot in his life, and a lot of the things he's said have been awful. And thankfully, we have Media Matters, who has gone back, combed through his appearances on Bubba the Love Sponge, a name that I just love saying every time I have to say it, and tracked these down. And the person who did that joins us now, the Damage Report, Madeline Peltz of Media Matters. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not doing well today. I'm going to keep it real, but I am happy that you're joining us and talking about this particular topic, actually. So thank you for doing that.
Of course.
So let's talk about this. How did this investigation get started? I mean, you obviously deserve a lot of credit for what it's been able to achieve in a very short period of time, but what led to this extremely in-depth, time-consuming set of research for you?
Sure. So I've been with Media Matters for about 2 years, and I've been covering Tucker for about 18 months. So that involves watching his program on a daily basis for that amount of time. And so I've been pretty familiar with what his current programming is at Fox, but I got curious about what was happening earlier in his career. One thing about Tucker is that he's had many different media careers. He started at PBS, where he was a legacy. His father was an anchor there. did long form pieces in magazine writing, and has been, of course, on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. And so I was looking to provide a little bit more context about where he, how he ended up where he is now at Fox. And that's how I ended up just poking around. And, you know, these things are on the internet, and that's how I found them.
I'm just curious. First of all, I apologize that you've had to listen to so much Tucker Carlson and will continue to have to do so. But as you were going through all of those archives, we've played quite a bit of the audio here. What to you stands out as the worst thing that you uncovered during that time?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFTR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
It's hard to pick one. A lot of stuff is very concerning and I think is revelatory of what motivates him to produce this white nationalist, we call it the white power hour nightly on Fox News. If I had to choose one, I would say that calling Iraqis semi-literate primitive monkeys is a very disturbing and racist thing to say, and goes to show what he thinks of people who don't look and talk and think like him, that they are less than human beings. I think that that is also reflected in his comments about the sexualities of underage girls, which he was not shy about sharing his feelings about. What is appropriate. And I think that those two things combined show a tremendous, not only lack of judgment, but contempt for people who, you know, aren't right-wing cable talk show hosts.
So I want to talk about the lead up to Media Matters releasing the first set of clips, because there's been a couple. He sees it as like a campaign against him, an attack, which I always find to be funny. It's just, you're not adding any commentary. You are simply playing his audio. If he's being attacked, I see it as him attacking himself. But I want to talk about the expectations that you had based on what you knew you were revealing. What did you think the reaction would be? And how do you compare that to the way people have reacted to what Media Matters has released thus far?
Well, I think it goes to show that Tucker Carlson's agenda and media persona that he puts on is extremely unpopular, based on this tremendous feedback that we have received. Decent people are outraged by a grown man who, you know, is fantasizing about 14-year-old girls experimenting sexually. I didn't think that we were going to get, you know, this level of attention. And I'm glad that we did, because it goes toward not just what is going on with Tucker Carlson, but is revelatory of what's going on at Fox and in the right-wing media in general. That there's this systemic rot at the core of it. But yes, I mean, I've been surprised by how much, the level of response that we've gotten. But I'm glad that people are sort of tuning into something that's a really serious and ongoing problem.
It certainly hasn't gotten a response, but I've also been surprised at the extent, well, I guess not really surprised, I have very low standards for them, but I've been, worried by the willingness of many people who philosophically share quite a bit with Tucker Carlson to completely excuse wanting to sleep with or marry 14-year-old girls, the semi-literate monkeys, as you pointed out, some like obvious, indefensible racist remarks have gotten a lot of press coverage, but haven't necessarily shaken the like Fox News' support for him and that sort of thing.
Right, and I think that that is indicative of the lack of editorial standards and leadership that's happening at the very top levels of Fox News. For example, if you think about some of their previous scandals that they've had, Glenn Beck began losing advertisers after he went on Fox and Friends and said that white people have, quote, a deep-seated hatred for President Obama. That was a big scandal, and he started losing advertisers, which ultimately led to the demise of his show. Now you're seeing these types of white nationalist alt-right identity grievances being screamed into one of the biggest media microphones in the mainstream ecosystem, and there's very little consequences for it. And I think that's why advertisers play such an important role, because the executives have made it clear at Fox News that they are not going to hold their top talent responsible for their irresponsibility and recklessness. And so the last line of defense against this moral rot that is infecting our mainstream media are advertisers who are sponsoring this programming. It
seems like Glenn Beck perhaps was just a little bit ahead of his time on that. He needed a president who shared a lot of those same thoughts and all that to provide cover for him. Is there more that we can expect that'll be coming from your investigation?
I'm not sure what else is going to be coming out, but I know that we reviewed nearly 100 hours of programming, and we found a lot of stuff. And I think it just goes to show that we're not out to embarrass Tucker Carlson. We're just out to demonstrate that this is the context in which we find his, media career, the state in which we find his media career currently. I think that it demonstrates what is going on and what motivates him to put on this persona that he does. So we were very specific in what we chose to release, and we're going to continue to do that.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your research. Definitely helped people to question some of the brand he's tried to build up around himself over the past couple of years. And Madeline Peltz, we appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a climate strike is going on in over 1,000 cities around the globe. We'll be breaking down what the strike is about after this. As we are recording this, hundreds of thousands of young people are on strike around the globe over inaction in dealing with climate change. And I find this to be one of the most positive stories that I've been able to cover for quite some time. By early yesterday, more than 1,600 events had been set up in 105 different countries across the world. And if we show you this next picture, you're going to see, imagine a globe behind that. But there's a lot of places. I immediately look at New Zealand, where 16 of those events were, but 209 marches over climate change in France, 158 in the US. I mean, this is a gigantic, massive global coordination to show that the next generation, and perhaps the generation after that, wants something to be done to stop their civilization from being perhaps irreparably harmed.
Well, when you
which
put it that way.
Which seems selfish of them, I guess. And we also have to point out, I guess one of the things that helped to contribute to this was one Swedish girl, Greta Thunberg, she protested outside Swedish parliament over this issue. That led to other students last year protesting in the UK, Australia, a number of other countries following her lead. And she just has, we've been trying to get her on the show. She has some awesome quotes about how frustrated she is with our generation and generations older than ours for not dealing with climate change in a serious fashion. She said at the time, you are not mature enough to tell it like it is, even that burden you leave to us children, talking to Swedish parliament. I mean, that's great.
That is amazing. And that is like the consistently shocking, but in a good way, aspect of a younger generation. Mm-hmm. Just stories like this where they have said on this and then in America on guns, the younger generation is the one that says, I'm not going to wait for you guys to make these changes. I'm going to show you unequivocally, and in this case, around the world, that we need to do something. So we're going to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Greta has said that she was inspired by the Parkland students organizing after that tragic shooting. And by the way, I mean, we're focused on Greta because she helped to start this movement. But obviously, there are young student leaders in over 100 countries that were helping to organize this, let alone in all the different cities in those countries. And they deserve credit as well. I also want to point out that while I am incredibly inspired by all of these young people taking climate change so seriously and for doing this hard work, it is not on them, and they are not going to save us. We don't need them to save us. We can save us. We can do something. It is awesome that the next generation is going to be so responsible, but it's not on them. We can't just wait decades and say, ah, they'll fix it later on. And when I'm in a nursing home someday, there'll be good people in government finally. No, we can't wait. We know that literally on this question, on climate change, we can't wait. So it is awesome that they're doing that, but it isn't their responsibility to do it.
Yeah, but they are the ones who are most likely to incur the most of the effects of climate change. Because
I totally get that. But I am frustrated when in politics, when like with the Parkland kids, a lot of people are like, yes, that's awesome. Someday they'll fix it. No, not someday. We can't just wait decades. We can't wait years. And I know a lot of those activists don't like the idea that it's all on them and that someday they'll be taking over.
There are some people in the United States. There's a bunch. And then one of the candidates, Pete Buttigieg, is a mayor who is among many mayors on a task force of cities that said, even though our president pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, our town is going to still adhere to those tenets. States have done that. Cities have done that. So there are people who are doing it. It's just so difficult and so frustrating when the people in power currently have not only... It's not that they have ignored climate change. It's they have actively worked to counteract the measures put in place to combat climate change.
Yeah.
That's so frustrating. But there are people out there who said, even though you guys want to go back, and these are people of all ages, we want to go forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and thankfully they have both on the Senate side and on the House side, you know, people who are doing the right thing. And we try to give them as much press coverage as possible.
And legislatively, if you want to take this, put it towards the Green New Deal so that we actually have some kind of plan that we can execute on that will make these messages sent by the youth of the world into some tangible policy that incidentally employs people and can serve the capitalist interests that say that they would be hurt by any climate-looking legislation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I think that on the merits, politicians in the US should be supporting the Green New Deal. But if they're not going to be swayed or persuaded by the fact that it's going to be a gigantic economic stimulus, it's going to help to save us from tens of millions of climate refugees, disruption of food production, all of those things. Also, pragmatically, the next generation really wants you to do something, so maybe it's in your party's future best interest to at least look like you take it seriously. That's what I would say. Let's move on to one other topic. Yesterday, more government oversight hearings, the most exciting TV for me personally. And we had Wilbur Ross, Commerce Secretary, going before. He had harsh questioning from a number of politicians that I'm a big fan of, including Ro Khanna. But on one particular topic, this was over the citizenship question being added to. What are you going to say?
I'm just laughing at the idea that right now I know you're like rewatching Game of Thrones, but I like the idea of before any new Congress, you would just binge watch every congressional legislative session or hearing.
Oh, I'm on season 89.
212.
Yeah, I guess the country's older than I implied. But no, I'm a little bit exaggerating, but when you find out these days that a hearing is being scheduled, are you not a little bit excited?
Right.
It is
brought
exciting.
Life to it.
And let's get into why it's exciting. So we've gone through multiple of these before, but we know that citizenship question is going to be added to the census if it is, because they hope that it will inspire some people not to answer the census, which means there will be less congressional apportionment to that area of the country. Obviously, that's what it's about. Now, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is going to lay that out. The full testimony, the full questioning she did was 8 minutes long. We obviously can't show all of that. You should look it up. But I want to show you a couple of clips that show how she makes this case from start to finish. Here's the first section.
He then wrote, quote, "It is essential that one simple question be added to the upcoming 2020 census. It's all there in black and white. Kobach is clear about his reason for adding the citizenship question in his correspondence to you. And it has nothing to do with the DOJ. It has nothing to do with the Voting Rights Act. It is about congressional apportionment to immigrants."
Okay, so first of all, it's about motivation for this. Now, Kris Kobach, former Secretary of State of Kansas, is one of the biggest pushers of voter suppression and all of that across the country. That is what his thing is. He was working for Donald Trump on his voter fraud commission. And he was the one communicating with government officials to get this done. And thankfully, they have the email trail that made very clear what the motivation was for. So there she lays out, despite the fact that Ross and others are gonna say that this is about just being consistent with past law or whatever, even though we haven't had a question like this in something like 60 years, she first lays out clearly why it's being done.
The problem with this is it's under the guise of them own, they say, we only wanna count citizens. But what you're doing is scaring people away. So you're going to not count certain citizens because they're afraid that the person from the Census Bureau is going to show up and report people who either are or aren't, because there have been people who've been detained who are legal citizens, but they've been targeted because they have brown skin. It is going to actually sway it the other way.
Yeah.
You're not going to count citizens. You're going to undercount in these areas, and it is 100% for gerrymandering purposes.
Yes. Yes, and I understand some people will be like, well, why would you want to count anyone who's not a citizen? Dude, take it up with the Constitution. It specifically says persons, not citizens. The word citizens existed back then, and they were familiar with it. They had bigger vocabularies than ours. If they wanted to count citizens, they would have written that into the Constitution. So to the originalists, take it up with the people who wrote the document. Anyway, the next section, she continues. Let's take a look.
It's been stated multiple times in this hearing that the question is a reinstatement of a previous question. But the last time a citizenship question, specifically around citizenship, was discussed on the census was in 1950. And I pulled up the old question here. And I know it's tough to see from far away, but I pulled up the old question that was originally on the census in 1950. And I see here that the question that is being proposed for 2020 is quite materially different. So it is not a reinstatement. It is not to placing again or a restoration of the original question. It is a materially different question.
Okay, so if you're watching this show, then you probably don't need to have explained why that clip should be exciting. I understand people are not really into politics to be like, comparisons of citizenship questions between the 1950s and today. But the thing is, what she is laying out hypothetically, maybe this is hyperbolic, could lead to him going to jail. Because what they're trying to do is skirt the law by pretending that they don't need to go through the normal 5-year process of a sort of applying for a question to be added and all of that. The law requires that and has for half a century, which she gets into in a bit that we can't go to. But they're pretending that it's the same thing, even though she points out, and apparently nobody, I guess including me, actually looked up the old question to find that it is not in fact the same thing.
And that's what's being done so well by people like definitely Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, Ro Khanna.
Yeah.
People who take the issues you know as like buzzwords, citizenship question, minimum wage, living wage, and turn it into moments in political discourse that you can really wrap your head around. Mm-hmm. And she's saying, listen, dude, you're saying you're just putting a question back? You put a different question in.
Exactly.
And you're supposed to give us 3 reports. That's another part of it. You gave us 2. Where's the third one?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone does need to go watch the entire video because it's great. Because Elijah Cummings, Mark Meadows tries to jump in and say, she's talking about some statute that's, I don't know what she's talking about. I mean, I feel like we need time to look at that statute. She needs to mention it. And she goes, it's statute 705.3-6 of the code. And then Elijah Cummings goes, well, I think she outlined it pretty well.
Exactly. And so look, as we give her credit, what I mean is her and her staff. Because they went up and they looked up these laws. Mark Meadows says he doesn't know that statute. That's because he doesn't. Because he is the sort of actor in a suit that most politicians are.
Yes.
They don't read the bills. They don't know the laws. They're there to give a couple of talking points and then vote the way they're told to. She doesn't do that.
Which is so ironic because people accuse her of being some actor stooge who's just reading from questions. But that's impossible if you look at her interactions with these people because she is thinking on her feet.
Yeah.
And she does know the message she wants to get across. And it's different from what Mark Meadows does where he'll get up on those kinds of stages and ask, and they don't even ask questions half the time. Mm-hmm. They just speak about whatever they think they need to say from a piece of paper given to them after focus group after focus group.
Yeah.
Tells them this is how you should message.
Yeah.
But AOC doesn't do that. She gets up there and she links something you've heard of to an actual question phrased in a way you're interested in and does not let them get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, as you said, Cummings comes in and he's gotten, so at that point, Ross has gone on the record saying, we have abided by the law. So Cummings says, okay, so we're gonna need to get that in writing and we're gonna look into it. And then she says, just as a reminder, you're still sworn. And so, like, I guess Ross is old. Maybe he can claim his memory's not good. I mean, if you see him in that video, it's amazing that he's able to survive the hearing. But he hypothetically might have been lying under oath about complying with the law on that question, what the motivation was to start it in the first place.
Right, especially because she does have those documented interactions to
exactly.
some extent with Kobach. The other aspect of it, though, in the video, in its entirety, which is about 8 minutes, and I do think everyone should go watch it. Just rewind this and see the attribution that we have. It's on, who is it? Eric Fernandez's Twitter handle.
Yes.
So go look it up on Eric Fernandez's Twitter handle. But it is very clear that at some point, Wilbur Ross looks over at the time and says, oh, I'm not going to have to answer this question because her time's up. And afterwards, he says, he literally says that, her time's up, I see. Mm-hmm. And Elijah Cummings goes, no. You can answer the question.
Yeah, he says, I'll ask it.
And then he says, could you read it again? And so he's like, can you ask the question again? Because he has tuned out. And that is the main question. And it always is with her. It was with the Wells Fargo executive where she finally got, at the end of her time, she said, why do you invest in these things if you know that they're going to leak, these pipelines? Mm-hmm. And he goes, it's worth the risk. And mm-hmm. she's going to get there.
Yeah.
There are tons of actual lawyers who are Congress people. But AOC does better cross-examinations than every single one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody should be trying to put together the sort of team of aides that she has and researchers. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. We come back, lots more to get to. So as we are still processing the terrible massacre, the terrorist attack in New Zealand, I want to ask you a question, Brett. This is sort of a related issue. This is a side issue to the main concern, which is what happened in this community and what we're going to do about it. But I have a question. Will this actually help people to finally recognize how serious this issue of online radicalization of right-wing white men on the internet is?
I mean,
will it break through?
In those situations, you need to look at the difference between this and all others. The difference here is it happened in New Zealand.
Do you think that that's less likely then to?
Is it going to change radicalization of white men in America?
Well,
no.
Perhaps the media start talking about it. Because I showed you a headline, and the headline from the Daily Mail, admittedly, right. was another one of those. What happened to this kid? Like, I get his father died and he took a trip across the world. Was he radicalized? Like, that same sort of like, it's a good kid gone astray sort of thing. And we see that all the time when it's a right-wing white male.
Right. And I like to believe that there is good in everyone and mm-hmm. things go bad, but that doesn't excuse any double standards you would have for writing this kind of story about a white dude and not the same kind of story about a radicalized young person who was born in Pakistan, you know? But yeah, that's what I say. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean,
I
guess my fingers
anything.
Are crossed in that, first of all, maybe the fact that it wasn't in the US means that the media can be a little bit more honest about it and not as sensitive about talking about something directly related to our politics. Maybe the fact that he specifically cited Donald Trump as a symbol of the return to white identity or something like that. I mean, it was so clearly a white supremacist terror attack. And so devastating in the death toll. No, probably not, but I hope so.
I just don't see any way in which it changes anything. And then that's so depressing, but that's kind of how we started the show off, saying mm-hmm. I am thrown for the same loop mm-hmm. over and over again. The more things happen, the more things are normalized.
Yeah.
I don't see anything that's tangibly different about this, but it is in another country. And I know Australia and New Zealand aren't those other countries, but aren't the same, but like Australia had one famous mass shooting and changes were made in that country.
Yeah. Well, New Zealand had a similar thing actually in the 90s.
And New Zealand, okay, so
they changed their gun laws, but
they have different gun laws. But I just don't see any way in which this materially changes how people are radicalized online, especially when people like Candace Owens are immediately using it to tweet crying while laughing emojis and promote their upcoming gigs.
Yeah.
And the nature of the radicalization online in these message boards is kind of this weird fog of, are they serious? Mm-hmm. And most people probably aren't that serious. You don't know how many people are going there just to see what the hell is going on. And then there's the nihilists out there who are just trying to kick up dust on everything. I don't know how many people are actually radicalized killers, but... That's what makes it so difficult, and I don't think we got any more clarity after this about that dynamic, so I don't know.
Yeah, not in terms of numbers, but certainly that there are some. I mean, how many violent incel attacks do we need in this country before we start to take it seriously? And that doesn't mean, look, the vast majority of incels obviously would never want to hurt anyone, but in those forums, sometimes a person picks up a gun and starts killing people.
But on the other side of it, something that also doesn't change is in the wake of this, it's sad that it has to happen, but it does happen. There are people around the world who point out, no, all Muslims are not senseless killers. They did not have it coming to them. The people who are extremist killers are the ones we need to keep tabs on, not those who just went to pray on a Friday.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's depressing.
Thanks, John.
So we're going to take a break. We're going to try to lighten things up just a little bit for a couple of minutes to close out the week after this. So just want to let you know, we were supposed to have Carrie Levine on from the Center for Public Integrity. She was going to break down a really interesting story of corruption in the White House, as well as Beto O'Rourke's donor network. Unfortunately, we had Skype issues, so we will hopefully be able to talk to Carrie sometime next week. With that, let's lighten things up. The next Marvel movie, The Endgame, is going to be coming. And a trailer came out. And look, we talk about a lot of serious stuff here. But I'm also a nerd, and I'm hyped for the movie. Let's take a look, and we'll react.
I like this one.
Ah, that's so good.
Did you like Marvelous Mrs. Marvel?
What's that?
Sorry, did you like Captain Marvel?
Those are different. One's a comedian, one's an intergalactic superhero. Yeah, I did.
You did.
And I mean, it's not Brie one of my Larson favorite three or whatever, but it was good.
I've never seen a Brie Larson movie, so
I never have either.
Oh, so I hadn't seen Room or anything, but I did. I'm curious about her. Because I the moment, like, little micro expressions you see from Chris Hemsworth, I just don't see the same, like, there's a person in there out of Brie Larson. So I'm excited to see.
Well, like, she's pretty restrained as a character, but I liked that little bit of what it says about her and the relationship she doesn't have. Because she's coming in now to a group that's been around for, like, more than 10 movies, is probably on its last movie. She's going to be one of the next generation. And so I think it's important to see how they interact and everything. Anyway, look, I understand it's like super cool to like not like popular things or whatever. And trust me, I don't like lots of popular stuff. But as much as I originally thought that I hated superhero movies years ago, I love these movies.
Yeah, there's a foregone cost. Like, I'm going to spend the $19 to go see this in a theater. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to get like the stadium seats that recline.
We should do that.
I'm definitely going to have this. We'll go to our special spot in the top corner.
Okay.
Anyways, I am really excited about this. I am in it. I'm going to be really sad that this is like the last of this movie series, but
probably no more Captain America, probably no more Iron Man.
Everybody just needs to take a moment to appreciate. In a world where like everyone's face was blown off by The Matrix and they had one movie and the other two were garbage.
Yeah.
The ability to put together 10 years of film.
Many films.
Just that whole team that was able to do that, and there's not a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since...
Well, the second Thor was pretty... The Dark World.
That's the one I haven't seen.
It's pretty bad. I don't think it technically has a plot. I don't think that the people who are writing it were talking to each other or to the director.
But
no, they're very good. And look, I like... We live in a world where there are very few heroes. I like to see heroes. I like to see people who are willing to sacrifice themselves, who actually work for the greater good. Like, in a very real sense, heroism is a progressive thing. Maybe that's a weird self-centered, like politically self-centered thing to think, but I like seeing it. I like being reminded that we can overcome, we can work for the common good.
But people can die in this one. Ha ha ha, stakes.
They probably will. Anyway, thank you for joining. Great to have you on, Brett. Thank you everybody for watching. We'll be back next week with a lot more for you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.